This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The first time in history the Supreme Court hears oral arguments on the phone, and we've got an upcoming case with the president at the Supreme Court.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay. Oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to give their attention, for the court is now sitting.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, this was a, I have to say, quite a historic day on multiple counts. I'm back in the studio today. That may not be every day, but we had a power outage where we live, and I had to get in, so we wanted to hear the Supreme Court arguments that took place today, so our offices are close by, so I was able to come in, but we are social distancing, I will tell you that. Now, back to the history. For the first time in Supreme Court history, the United States Supreme Court heard oral arguments by telephone. They also, for the first time in history, released those arguments in real time, meaning I just listened to the arguments on C-SPAN, so you heard the entire argument. It was structured very differently than they normally are structured, and what I mean by that is that the way that they structured it was normally you start and they jump right in. Here you went about 2 minutes uninterrupted, and then the questions came in the order of seniority. There were all hardball questions from every side. In other words, sometimes you'll get a hard, tough question from one justice that may not be on your side, but then another justice will come in and say, but what you're really arguing is such and such. You don't have that with this format because it goes one at a time. Most justices asked two questions. That include, by the way, Clarence Thomas, who doesn't always actively participate. I've had him ask questions in my cases, but he's pretty quiet during most oral arguments. He was not today. They went in order, and then at the conclusion of the argument, and you found that the other side went, and then because I will be going first in representing the president, here's the brief that I filed on behalf of the president of the United States. It's one of actually three briefs. Actually, it's one of about six briefs in the course of the proceedings at the Supreme Court. And then you got 3 minutes to sum up at the end, uninterrupted, which I will tell you is unheard of in Supreme Court history. I mean, it just, I mean, I normally get up there for rebuttal and you get maybe two words out of your mouth. I've literally had questions as soon as I got up there. You start it, but it did start the same way. Do we have the, I want to play it for everybody. It was, if you were just listening to it, you would not know they were doing it by conference call other than a couple of glitches, which I'm sure they're working through. Here's what it sounded like.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay. Oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
There you have it. God save the United States and this honorable court started like it always does. But they were not in their chamber. Than Bennett is in Washington across the street from the Supreme Court. He's across the street. They're not. Than, how are things up there right now? Who's coming in session and who's not?
Well, the Senate is coming into session this week. The House probably not till next week. But, Jay, just on the topic you were mentioning, that's the thought I had, too. 3 uninterrupted minutes to close. That would probably be a dream for you. But I was thinking about you because you've got the cases coming up, your history in that courtroom. But, Jay, the other takeaway I had from watching these proceedings, I wondered if it wouldn't be as confrontational because they weren't in the room. Not the case. I mean, Lisa Pratt, one of the advocates, and Justice Gorsuch, they went back and forth at it pretty intensely. So just because it's by teleconference does not mean that this thing is not going to be, I don't know if combative is the right word, but there's going to be an exchange of ideas still.
Well, Lisa Blatt's a great Supreme Court advocate. I've known her, worked with her for years when she was with the Solicitor General's office. She's brilliant. She did a brilliant job. They both did a very good job. And I think the justice adjusted to it well. I mean, one point, Justice Breyer's, either his phone wasn't on, it was garbled, and then at one point, I think Justice Sotomayor probably was talking, but nobody could hear anything. So one thing we're going to learn is you're going to have to really listen carefully. I want to tell you what's coming up in the Supreme Court week because there's a lot of big cases, some involving the president, some involving others. You're going to want that information. Andy Economo is going to join us coming up in the next segment. So stay tuned. 800-684-3110. If you got any questions about the Supreme Court, 1-800-684-3110. Or what's ahead, or of course, also your support of ACLJ at ACLJ.org. The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. You witness history today, and those of you that got up at 10 o'clock to watch C-SPAN, I don't know if you did, but you should, you got to hear in real time a Supreme Court case involving bookings.com. A friend of mine, Lisa Blatt, argued that. She did a great job. Both advocates were great. The justices were great. Let me tell you how it went. It's different, completely different than when you're doing an argument in the chambers. These were all done telephonically. Nobody was in the same location. And other than a glitch here or there, which I'm sure they're going to work through, it went pretty smooth. The one thing that's really interesting to me in it was that you were asking, you would receive, went in seniority. So the Chief Justice asked the first question or two. Then when you finished, the next justice would come on and ask a question and be introduced by the Chief, and on it went. And then you got 2 minutes in the beginning to put your argument forward without interruption. And then if you're in the situation like we are in the president's case, where we've sued Congress and also sued the district attorney in New York. We're trying to get records that we do not believe they're constitutionally entitled to. I get to start for 2 minutes uninterrupted, and then at the end, when it's all over, I get to go back up for 3 minutes at a summary and a rebuttal with no questions being interrupted. At least they haven't so far. Maybe they will when we come up, but they didn't do it that way so far. Andy Economo is an experienced Supreme Court advocate. He's worked with me on a lot of Supreme Court cases. He's a senior counsel with the ACLJ. He's in Atlanta right now, staying safe and being well, as I like to tell people. Andy, what was your reaction to it?
I was very impressed with it. I think it opens a new era in Supreme Court jurisdiction, Jay. Once you let the cat out of the bag, it's going to be hard to put the cat back in the sense of not broadcasting these arguments, at least broadcasting them simultaneously with them being given and giving the justices the opportunity seriatim to ask the questions, and then let the lawyers answer each justice without justices blurting in and interrupting. And I think that's very important. I think also important is the 3-minute summation that you're given at the end. Hopefully that will continue to be given without interruption, because I think it makes the flow for the advocate much better. And I was impressed with it. The glitches were minimal. The sound was good. I watched it on C-SPAN. I thought it was very well done. Chief Justice took things under control. Nobody interrupted anybody else. There were the give and take with Gorsuch there in that one instance. I noticed that. But it was done professionally. And I think it's a new era. It was very historic and exciting to me to be listening to it.
So here's what was interesting about it to me, Andy, is that it was, if you, for the person that doesn't know a lot about or hasn't seen Supreme Court arguments, I think it would be about what they anticipated. It's very different than an actual Supreme Court argument, though, which is much more, the answers were here, where the lawyers were able to explain their answers at much greater length. The truth of the matter is, in the actual Supreme Court argument, it's seconds until the next question comes in or there's a follow-up, or that's not what I meant. You didn't have a lot of that. I don't think you're going to have a lot of that. It's also going to be harder to read tea leaves, so to speak. And what I mean by that, sometimes you get a question that, you know, a hard question, and then a justice that was more leaning your way would come in and say, well, Mr. Secular, wouldn't the answer to that be such and such? Because they're arguing with each other. You don't see that in this format, Andy, because they have predetermined questions, it looked like, although there were some follow-ups on other justices, but it was much more predetermined.
Yeah, the questions were obviously predetermined by the justices. They knew what they were going to ask. They had probably written them out, and they knew exactly where they were going. And it gives the advocate an opportunity to respond to the predetermined question in a full and complete fashion without being interrupted by another justice who wants to either upstage or make their point. I liked the format. I thought it was very good. I prefer it to the old oral argument format, because I think it gives a smoother flow and it allows the advocate to state their position more fully, more completely, and without the interruption that flows when you're in live in the Supreme Court. I really liked it, and I endorse it. I really do.
I know that a couple of lawyers are approaching the actual how-to differently. I am going to actually have a podium set up here in our offices where I will be addressing the court standing up in a suit. I'm going to wear a suit and a tie and a podium, and we're going to be in a room that'll have good sound like this so that we can hear. I think that you got to really listen closely to what they're saying, because that's the, you could, when you're there, you could see it. You don't get to see it, so it's a little bit of a different feel. But also, there was something that was interesting to me. I noticed, you notice this, Andy, that a couple of the justices said good morning to the advocates?
I noticed that, yeah. Breyer and Kavanaugh both said good morning. Again, that's very nice and cordial, but it wastes time, and it's really not necessary.
Well,
and I wish they'd get to the business.
I kind of thought it was nice. I mean, you know, we're in a very unusual, we're in the middle of a pandemic, but it does show the institutions are go on and that they can be adaptable, and I think that was a positive. For those of you that don't know, we've got a bunch of cases at the Supreme Court this term. We're involved in four that are being argued. Three of which we're doing in chief, one of which we're an amicus on. The three that we're arguing are the Donald Trump versus Mazars. That is this brief right here. I didn't bring the other one in with me. It's also blue. My colleague Patrick Strawbridge will do the oral argument. Will Consovoy, Patrick, me, Jordan, Stewart, we're on the briefs on these. So this is the brief on that one. That case will be argued on May 12th at 10 o'clock. I will then do the second argument following up at 11 o'clock. That argument will involve a local district attorney in New York trying to obtain financial records from the president. But guess what subpoena he used? The exact same one that was used in this case. Exactly word for word, almost word for word, with some minor stylistic changes. And so we're going to have those two arguments. Those are actually three cases because two of the congressional cases are consolidated. Then there's a fourth case, which we're going to talk about in the next segment of the broadcast, which is the Little Sisters of the Poor, where we filed an amicus, a friend of the court brief. But I want to go to Than Bennett for a moment here, because it kind of tells you. So is the Senate, the Supreme Court is operating completely remotely. All of the justices today were in different locales. What's going on? Now, Congress decided the House is not coming back, correct?
That's right. Not this week, Jay. The House and the Senate are taking different approaches. And, you know, I think this is less a partisan thing and more to do with the size of the various chambers. I mean, the United States Senate, with only 100 members, can do social distancing much easier, Jay. It's not as hard for them to space out votes. It's not as hard for them to separate committee hearings. There's going to be a judicial nominations hearing on Wednesday. They have special procedures in place for that. It's much more difficult for the House, Jay, and they are trying to work through how that's going to look, likely likely next week when they come back, but they're still going to have to change the way that voting happens. And I will tell you, there's some dialogue happening now between Speaker Pelosi's plan to do proxy voting, where one member might control more than one vote on behalf of other members, and maybe a different idea where there would actually be technology used to, for remote voting. I kind of hope it moves that way. But Jay, the two chambers are having to approach this differently. The Senate is here this week. The House likely back in a limited capacity next week.
Andy, the one thing you lose in this oral argument, and I think Than just sent me a little note on this, and it's true. When you're very close to them, when you're actually in the Supreme Court, I mean, you're about, I think at the furthest point, it's like 16 feet. So you are very close. And the ability to read body language, both their ability to read your body language and your ability to read their body language, is something I think you do miss here. And the questions are what I would call not stilted, but less give and take.
Yeah, they're not as contentious in the sense of the give and take that you have in person. And it is close, Jay. I mean, you're practically under the Chief Justice's nose when you're standing in the middle there. And the give and take of any present and actively participating engagement like usually happens is always going to be greater, and it's always going to be more lively. But I think in this age of pandemic, in this age of COVID crisis that we have, this was the best solution, and I think it worked out very well. I like the orderliness of it. I like the fact that an advocate could finish his or her statement and not have interruptions and justices playing up and trying to outdo one another. I like that.
I like the joust. I like the fight. I like the in-court combat. But you know what? I'm going to like this too. Interestingly, so what I'm going to do is I had a podium built that is a podium that looks exactly like the Supreme Court podium. And I'm doing that because these are critically important cases. Any case of the Supreme Court is critically important, but here we're representing the President of the United States. And I'm going to try to duplicate in my head as much as I can. I've done a couple of moot courts already, but I'm going to do some this week from the podium in a suit, getting ready for it. That's how you practice and practice and practice, even if the questions are over the phone. And we're going to have the whole system set up so we could do it. So hopefully our sound will be really good. I expect it will. There's another case that the Supreme Court of the United States were involved in, Little Sisters of the Poor. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by our colleague, senior counsel to the ACLJ, Jeff Surtees, and he will discuss that case in depth. We'll get into that. Is Andy staying with us? Andy's done? Okay, he may come back later on in the broadcast. And again, your support of the ACLJ was great in April and in March, I have to say, and we appreciate it. ACLJ.org. Our Supreme Court date, May 12th. Appreciate your prayers, but you'll be able to watch it, at least listen to it, on C-SPAN.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
So on May 12th, we're going to be arguing three cases at the Supreme Court of the United States. Donald J. Trump versus Mazars USA, Donald J. Trump versus Deutsche Bank. These are congressional subpoenas. And then Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, versus the District Attorney for the County of New York, Cyrus Vance Jr. So those three cases are going to be argued May 12th. But there's a case coming up on Wednesday of this week, Little Sisters of the Poor. Big case, one that's gotten kind of passed over once. But I want Jeff Surtees, who was the primary architect of the brief. Jeff, welcome to the broadcast. Tell us a little bit about the case. I think people need to be refreshed with what this case is about.
Absolutely, Jay. Yeah, in 2017, the Trump administration issued regulations protecting employers, such as the Little Sisters of the Poor, which is a Catholic order of nuns that care for the elderly poor, from having to comply with the HHS abortion pill mandate that the Obama administration imposed on employers throughout the country almost 10 years ago. Well, the regulations that the Trump administration came up with in 2017, were done in light of the Supreme Court's decision in 2016. This is how many times the Little Sisters of the Poor have gone to the Supreme Court, which asked the parties to try to resolve their differences. Namely, how can the federal government achieve its interests, and how can the Little Sisters go about running their Catholic order and their charities according to their religious convictions. So the Trump administration came up with these regulations, and they're simple and they're straightforward. They basically say that if an employer has a moral or a religious objection to participating in the provision of these drugs, such as abortion-inducing drugs, then the employer doesn't have to pay for those drugs. It doesn't have to participate in the provision of those drugs. So one would think that, okay, the Trump administration settled these issues, we can now move on. Little Sisters of the Poor can now continue to run, their charities according to their religious convictions. Well, not so. Even before those regulations went into effect, several states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, California, and others, they filed a lawsuit in California and in Pennsylvania saying that these moral and religious exemptions were adopted in violation of federal law. And they also argued that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act didn't protect religious employers such as the Little Sisters of the Poor, who don't want to participate in the provision of abortion-inducing drugs. Well, last summer, Third Circuit Court of Appeals, we've been having lots of problems with that Court of Appeals these days, issued a nationwide injunction forbidding these rules to go into effect. So even after almost 10 years of the Obama administration's abortion pill mandate being in place, Little Sisters still not protected. They went to the Supreme Court, asked the Supreme Court to intervene. Supreme Court agreed to intervene, and the briefing is done, including our own amicus brief, and the argument is on Wednesday. And let's hope that once and for all, the Supreme Court will decide this case on the merits and hold that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act protects the Little Sisters of the Poor to operate their charity according to their religious convictions.
So, Jeff, if you were predicting the outcome of this case, what's your guess? 5-4 our way?
I think it's going to be 5-4 our way. It would be great if it were a unanimous decision upholding the right of religious freedom. Unfortunately, with abortion distortion and the political nature of the underlying issue, I don't think we're not going to get a unanimous decision, unfortunately, here.
So, Than, when Congress has had an interesting take on this, because when we did the Affordable Care Act issues, so much of it focused on the abortion issue, which they said, oh, nothing to do with any of this. And then, of course, as we've now litigated these cases out, it had everything to do with it.
Yeah, that's really the thought that kept running through my head as Jeff was going through that narrative, Jay, is just how long and wide sweeping the ramifications of elections are. I mean, we're talking about a decade of challenges over nuances of the Obamacare law. And, in this particular case, I think the exact quote Jeff used was, does the Religious Freedom Restoration Act protect the Little Sisters of the Poor? I mean, if it doesn't protect them, Jay, who does it protect? But I come back to this issue of how long lasting the consequences of elections are when it comes to legislation like this. The Trump administration did the right thing and rectified this, but it still takes another round going all the way up to the Supreme Court to ultimately carry the day on it. So, Jay, even though I'm with you and I'm with Jeff that I think the Supreme Court is going to do the right thing on this, it's going to be a decade of pain too late, not just for Little Sisters of the Poor, but other religious employers as well. So I think it's a good moment for voters all across the nation to take notice just how long-lasting these fights are if an administration comes in and infringes on religious rights like they did in this case.
So it appears, though, that a couple of the states, Jeff, don't like even the accommodation here. I look at New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what happened was after Hobby Lobby, where the court upheld the right of for-profit employers to not have to pay for and provide these abortion-inducing drugs, then the Obama administration came up with what they called an accommodation. But it wasn't an accommodation. It was smoke and mirrors. It was a way of getting against the religious beliefs and convictions of certain employers, such as the Little Sisters of the Poor, to comply with it. So it was just an indirect way of getting the Little Sisters of the Poor to still participate in the provision of these drugs by the federal government, in essence hijacking the insurance plan of the Little Sisters of the Poor. You know, when the accommodation that the Obama administration came up with was not like what we have here with what the Trump administration came up with, which is if you have a religious or moral objection, then you don't have to participate. They said if you have a religious objection, then you just tell your insurance company you don't want to provide it, and then we're going to make your insurance company provide it. But that's still participating in the provision of these drugs. And the Little Sisters of the Poor, a Catholic order of nuns, refused to do that. I mean, as Fan was saying so eloquently, if we're going to force a Catholic order of nuns to violate their religious conscience, then the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the Free Exercise Clause of the Bill of Rights mean nothing.
I want to show everybody it's a little Supreme Court history for you here. The brief of the petitioners, this is it is blue, bound, blue brief, lists all the lawyer's name, lists the case number. And this is the one we filed in the president's cases. If you file a friend of the court brief, they also have to be bound. They are a light green. And this is a brief. It said amicus curiae brief of the American Center for Law and Justice in support of petitioners. Now, in here, we assert arguments. And that's what's contained in these various pages. I'm showing this to our audience on TV and on our radio audience. Let me tell you what we're arguing. Because I think it's important to understand the context of what we put forward and why these briefs are important. By the way, our briefs have been cited by the Supreme Court in their opinions. And Jeff, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, the fact is that amicus briefs play a key role. I mean, we've had briefs cited by the Supreme Court.
That's exactly right. Well, in the NIFLA case a few years back with the right of pregnancy resource centers to not have to comply with California's edict that they advertise the provision of free abortion services, Justice Breyer, in his dissent, looked to and cited our amicus brief pointing out the viewpoint-based discrimination that was at the heart of that statute. So there is just no doubt that the Supreme Court justices read these amicus briefs, they pay attention to the arguments, and that they respond to those arguments as well.
So we say here, governmental accommodations of religious exercise like that afforded by the religious exemption here are well-established historical practices of this country. That's our brief to the Supreme Court of the United States. Jeff, thanks for being with us. Hey, we got another, that went quick. Another 30 minutes coming up. I'm going to get into some political issues. I'm going to get into a little bit on China, maybe get into a little bit more on the Supreme Court. We'll take your calls and comments. 1-800-684-3110. If you want to talk about the pandemic a little bit, 800-684-3110. And what about China's role? We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. If you don't get the whole hour of the broadcast, go over to aclj.org or Facebook or Periscope.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, we're not the only people that are live today. Let me tell you who else was live this afternoon or this morning. The Supreme Court of the United States, for the first time in U.S. history, went live via phone. The arguments were done via phone, literally on telephone lines. I think it went very well, by the way. And for the first time in our history, you were able to hear the arguments in real time. As they were, there was no delay there. Those arguments that you heard were being delivered precisely at the time that, and this is what's so good about this, precisely at the time they were being argued by the advocates and questions by the judges. The difference in the approach was, you got 2 minutes to make your argument up front without interruption. That's unusual. John Roberts has allowed that a little bit more. In the old days, and I've been doing it for going on 4 decades, I've argued in cases in the 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010s, and now this one will be 2020. You started, and they usually jump right in. But here it was much more structured. The Chief Justice spoke. Do we have any of the sound from that? Any of the questions? Like when the Chief Justice first does a question, I may want to play that. Normally that's not the way it goes, but they went in the order of seniority and they asked each asked a question or two, allowed the lawyer to answer, and then it would go on to the next justice until all nine were done. It went about 10 minutes on each side longer than normal, which I thought was interesting. And you got, if you were the petitioner, which we are here in the cases representing the president, we are the petitioner. And in the Little Sisters of the Poor, the pro-religious liberty side is the petitioner, which means that we get 3 minutes at the end to sum up the arguments or reply to theirs. And that, at least on the first one, was uninterrupted. Whether it will be or not, I don't know. Do we have one of the, any of the sound, Will?
We do have an interruption from the Chief Justice.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because normally when you get a question and then there's about to be an interruption, you know it's coming, so you pull back. It's a little bit different here, and you'll be able to, again, all you're doing is hearing it because that's all anybody could do, including the advocates, was hear it. Take a listen.
Because domain names are one of a kind, a significant portion of the public will always understand a generic.com term to refer to a specific business, even if it is not familiar with the particular business at issue.
That result counsel, is counsel, you mentioned the Goodyear case, but you did not quote the language from the trademark statute that is at issue here.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, was the chief probably on a speakerphone there? I think so. So you got to be, I told my colleagues, we're going to have to, you have to be really attentive, really listening in. And it's, I'm going to have it set up. I hope that I can really hear it. I'm not, I hope we will have it set up. So I am feeling like I'm in the room because it's very important that you hear it. Again, you don't see the nuances, but I am treating this no differently. This is the Supreme Court of the United States, and I'm which is the highest judicial institution in our country. It's the most prestigious in the world. And I'm representing the office, I'm representing the President of the United States. So I will be wearing a blue suit and a white shirt and a red tie, which is what I wear in Supreme Court cases. And I will be standing at a podium that I've had built that looks like the podium at the Supreme Court of the United States. And I will be staring at something so that I have at least feel like I'm looking at something as I do this. The great thing I'm missing about this one was my 7-year-old grandson was going to come watch his pawpaw do the argument in the Supreme Court. And one of my granddaughters has been reading about Justice Ginsburg. And so there, you know, for Riker and Sophie and for Golden Georgia too, they would have all been able to participate. It would have been great. My 6-month-old grandson, not so much, but he'll be historic. I guess he could come because it's going to be in our office. So I could say he saw his grandfather argue a case. He'd be about 6.5 months old. That's the only thing I'm really regretting is that they couldn't be in the actual courtroom. But you know what? That's what it is. One of my grandkids were in the chamber of the United States Senate, and I know my other grandkids watched when we did the impeachment hearing, which seems like 100 years ago. Than, I was thinking about that. You were there for part of that. Does that not seem like 100 years ago?
Another lifetime ago, wow. Jay. I mean, a week is a year.
A week is a year is right. I mean, it was just 3 months ago, not even. We were standing in the... In fact, it was like... I think it was... We finished up February 6th. So what is it, 3 months? Yeah. Wow. All right, we'll take your calls and comments coming back. 800-684-3110. China and the pandemic. When we come back from break, Wes Smith will be joining us.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Go from the Supreme Court of the United States to the situation with this pandemic and as it relates to China and what China's involvement. Well, there's a headline in Associated Press. Department of DHS reports that China hid virus severity to hoard supplies, that they knew it was serious and hoarded supplies. That's one of the allegations right now. Now, the President of the United States, President Trump, addressed this last night. Take a listen to this.
They knew they had a problem. I think they were embarrassed by the problem, very embarrassed. And, you know, the case could be made. They said, hey, look, this is going to have a huge impact on China, and we might as well let the rest of the world, because the last people they want, we've had a great year against China prior to the virus coming. But here's the thing. They allowed this to go into our country. They allowed it to go into other countries.
They allowed it to go into our country. They allowed it to go into other countries. This was the president last night. Joining us on the phone is our senior military analyst, Colonel Wes Smith. Colonel Smith, unless I don't know, is he on Skype or on the phone? Phone. All right, so Colonel Smith, your reaction to what the president has now said regarding China.
Well, you know, this is very, very serious. China, as we pointed out in a blog last week on our website, they are a geopolitical adversary. They are not our geopolitical friend, and they really can't be trusted in all matters to tell the truth or even, as most Western nations do, to act in a way that protects the general welfare of the civilized world. You know, people criticize the president for the America First thing. China is China First, you know, exponentiated. It really is. And think about this, Jay, also. I was thinking about this morning. There are national security implications about this. You know, in the ancient days of tribalism and throughout recorded human history, most wars have not been fought initially over territory or political control, but rather over food, water, and other supplies necessary for life. Now, I'm not suggesting that we go to war with China or that we're going to, but protecting and providing for its citizens has always been a national security issue, Jay, and it still is. And what China has done, I think, has an impact on the national security of the United States. They lied about how widespread COVID was in China. They delayed revealing that it could be caught by human-to-human contact and probably pressured the World Health Organization to align with that information. All, Jay, while buying and hoarding world supplies of PPE. The seriousness of this cannot be overstated.
No, you know, you mentioned the thing about the World Health Organization, Thanos, as if WHO was running offense for the Chinese on this, for the Chinese government.
I think complicit's the right word, Jay. I really do. All the intel points to that direction. And I will tell you, on Capitol Hill, there's two main things that I'm hearing with increasing frequency. The first is suspicions on where the virus originated. I think the intel community is coming closer to a consensus on that. But honestly, Jay, even without a consensus on that, I think it is pretty clear that China took precautionary measures inside their own country, prohibiting travel from Wuhan, yep, without prohibiting international China. So, Jay, they didn't tell the world, but they actually took active steps to allow the spread to leave their country, yep, while protecting their own country. That's just unacceptable.
Look at the words coming out of the Chinese were trying to blame the United States a week ago. And now our Secretary of State, good friend of ours, Mike Pompeo, he addressed this too. Listen to what he said.
The Chinese Communist Party had the opportunity to prevent all of the calamity that has befallen the world. And here we find ourselves today. You and I were talking about, we haven't seen each other physically for a long time. That's true of people all across the world. This is an enormous crisis created by the fact that the Chinese Communist Party reverted to form, reverted to the kinds of disinformation, the kinds of concealment that authoritarian regimes do.
I mean, think about this for a moment. And Wes, I think about this. The Chinese government knows this is going on. They hoard the supplies. The World Health Organization comes out and says, oh, it's a localized thing. They've got it under control. And now the entire world has been turned upside down because of what the Chinese government allowed to happen. And that's who allowed this to happen. The Chinese government allowed this to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And, this is tight, and let me just say one other thing. And this is the world that my grandkids have to grow up in right now. So let me tell you my view on China. It's like germ warfare what they did. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, the seriousness of this cannot be overstated, which is why a number of countries, including the United States, are calling out for China to be held accountable for this. And this whole deal about hiding information, delaying information, and then hoarding supplies, all of this, you know, to add insult to injury, to cover this up, according to the Department of State, Mike Pompeo, they then delayed revealing standard trade and import-export data, which you know, the nations in the G20 share with each other. They delayed their reports in order to hide the fact that they were buying and hoarding medical equipment.
Yeah, well, Mike Pompeo was very judicious, the way you said that, Colonel Smith. But Mike Pompeo was not so judicious. Here's what he said.
Remember, China has a history of infecting the world, and they have a history of running substandard laboratories. These are not the first times that we've had a world exposed to viruses as a result of failures in a Chinese lab.
You know, Than, I think about this on your end. You're the same age as my children, and you've got children, and they're growing up right now in a very different world than it was 3 months ago. I mean, I think about the fact that we were in the United States Senate just in late January, January 21st until February 5th, so we were there for 3 weeks. Two members that we know of, Rand Paul, and then the lawyer for the managers, Dan Goldman, both ended up getting COVID-19. Both survived it, fortunately. But this pandemic that has been released on the United States by the Chinese cannot go without some kind of response, congressionally, China's, as well as through the executive.
I wholly agree with you, Jay. China is a threat, and not just an economic one. I mean, their actions in this case prove that they are a threat in a number of ways to the United States. And I would say two things. One, this is why we have consistently and fiercely fought against losing any U.S. sovereignty to any international body, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, or any other for that matter. And Jay, these comments by Secretary Pompeo, number two, this is not hindsight. This letting outside inspectors, specifically inspectors from the United States, but also from other countries, inside laboratories like this has been an ongoing debate in the international community for a long time, and China has not done it. So now for them to sort of sanctimoniously say, we run the safest laboratories, Jay, there's a way to prove that. Follow the standards that the rest of the world does and let outside inspectors in to confirm that they do. You know, maybe it didn't come out of this lab. There would have been a way to prove it. It would have been allowing those inspectors in. They didn't do it. Jay, I think there's got to be a response, and I think you're going to see one out of the United States Senate pretty soon.
Well, I mean, as I said, DHS is very concerned about it. They said that their report indicates that the World Health Organization was not told that the coronavirus was a contagion for much of January so that China could order medical supplies from abroad, and that imports of face masks and surgical gowns and gloves increasingly grew. There's supply increased. Those conclusions are based on the 95% probability that China changes in imports and export behavior were not within normal range. China informed the WHO of the outbreak on December 31st. It contacted the U.S. Centers for Disease Control on January 3rd and publicly identified the pathogen as the novel coronavirus on January 8th. And reports are it was already functioning in Europe way before then. And so this, Wes, this is a, you know, the Chinese, it's not just a lot of explaining to do. They owe the world not just an apology. This should be damages. People have died in huge numbers, where close to 70,000 Americans have died, more than that across the globe. And our world has been turned upside down because of these people, this government's action. It's not against the Chinese people. It's against the government that allowed this to happen.
Right, right. And the totalitarian Chinese government, under communist control, cruel to their own people, has been thoughtless and careless with the rest of the world. And I think, Jay, you're exactly right. There has to be compensation. They have killed so many thousands and thousands of people because of their irresponsibility, and not just their irresponsibility. Had they made a mistake, had it accidentally gotten out of the lab, had they just come forward and been honest and transparent about it, so many deaths could have been avoided. And that's not even talking about the world economy, which is probably going to take years to recover simply because of the dishonesty and the tight control, the inhumanity of the communist Chinese government.
All right, Colonel Westman, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your work on this. Stan, let me go to you. What do you think Congress is going to do here?
Well, I think they're going to look at a couple of things. One, I think they're going to continue to ratchet up economic sanctions. Two, I think they're going to look at the trade conversations that the president's been having with China through a new lens and understand why he's been tougher on them. And then, Jay, number three, I think they will take a specific look at one of the issues that you just mentioned, and that is why the World Health Organization did not pick up on those trade abnormalities that you referenced. I mean, they are the entity, Jay, that should have noticed those abnormalities and then sounded the alarm for the rest of the world. I know that the administration has removed funding from them. Jay, honestly, the Congress, who holds the power of the purse, they should not issue another dime to the World Health Organization until these are remedied. And I would tell you, maybe not even then.
Chinese own a lot of our debt. Let me just say that the Chinese own a lot of our debt. And in the law, we call things sometimes liquidated damages. I don't know what that debt amount is. I think it's $6 trillion. Doesn't even come close to the damage they've caused on our economy and our fellow citizens. Let me tell you something. They hold our debt. Let me just leave it at that. All right, we're going to take your calls when we come back. 1-800-684-3110. You can talk about anything in the last segment of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. Back with more, including your calls. 800-684-3110. Don't forget to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls. I want to play another bite from Mike Pompeo on the World Health Organization as it relates to the situation with China and this virus. Take a listen to number 11.
China behaved like authoritarian regimes do, attempted to conceal and hide and confuse. It employed the World Health Organization as a tool to do the same. These are the kind of things that have now presented this enormous crisis, an enormous loss of life, and tremendous economic cost all across the globe. The Australians agree with that. You hear the Europeans beginning to say the same thing. I think the whole world is united, understanding that China brought this virus to the world.
You know, we've got Andy Economo joining us again, senior counsel for the ACLJ. He's done a lot of work with us globally. And Andy, I think about this. I've been to China. I've given a speech, a series of speeches at Peking University, which is the equivalent of their Harvard. And the fact of the matter is here, what the Chinese regime did and what they've changed all of our lives. I mean, you're in Atlanta in your house. I'm in the studio today because we had a storm, so I had to be at a place where we had internet and I was able to come to you today. But even here, we are socially distancing, masks. I mean, you name it. They wreaked havoc on the world, the Chinese government.
They did, and Mike Pompeo is absolutely correct in his analysis. They covered it up. Who the World Health Organization assisted them in concealing it. They hoarded and stockpiled medical equipment for the day that it was going to come out. I still believe that it was intentional. I don't believe it was just some loose animal in the wet market. I believe it was intentionally done to undermine us, yes, and them too, but they have less to lose. They've got 1.3 billion population, so what do they care? Meanwhile, they've changed our entire mode of living, Jay. What is normal for us, what has changed? We're locked in our houses. We walk around with gloves and masks. What a terrible situation we have been put in. And I laid this directly at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, I don't think there's anything else to say to that. I could say any better than what Andy just said. But the Secretary of State was asked this question by Martha Raddatz at ABC News. Mr. Secretary, have you seen anything that gives you high confidence that it originated in the Wuhan lab? Take a listen.
Mr. Secretary, have you seen anything that gives you high confidence that it originated in that Wuhan lab?
Martha, there's enormous evidence that that's where this began. We've said from the beginning that this was a virus that originated in Wuhan, China. We took a lot of grief for that from the outset, but I think the whole world can see now.
I think the whole world does see it now. Whitney's calling on line one from Texas. Whitney, you're on the air.
Thanks so much, Jay.
Sure.
I also agree that this was intentionally dispersed or allowed to travel by the Chinese government.
Yep.
And the reason why I think that is that, you know, certainly they suffered some human losses, but we kind of know from, you know, their cultural mindset that that's not so important. What they can't abide are the economic losses. And I think once they realized that they had become crippled economically by this virus, the best way to mitigate their own losses is to spread those losses around. And then by allowing the virus to escape their borders, they knew that economic havoc was going to be spread equally amongst the world.
Now, I think that's, Whitney, a great call. And Than, it points to, I think, the issue of what not only the White House does here, but what does Congress do?
Yeah, and at the very least, to Whitney's point, I mean, they were trying to spread the reputational harm, whether or not they were trying to spread the health harm, which I think there's a great amount of evidence that they were. They were certainly trying to spread the reputational harm. Jay, I mean, look, whether it was intentional or not, when they knew the virus was spreading and failed to warn anybody else, an accusation that it was intentional is absolutely fair because the burden of proof should be on them to show that it's not. So I would tell you this, Jay, I think Secretary Pompeo has made it very clear that the administration is going to investigate this in until they know these answers, there is growing consensus inside the intelligence community that it did originate in the lab. Now they're sort of in the motive phase of investigation. And when it comes to Congress, Jay, how about Congress return to issues that matter to the American people? And after this, after the recovery from this virus, maybe there's going to be another stimulus package. How about finding out the origins of this and then holding those accountable? How about that be next on their list?
Andy, you look at the fact that I mentioned that the China controls about $6 trillion of our debt, maybe more. And in the law, we call it liquidated damages. You've caused this harm, the liquidated damage amount would be at least X. I think it should be at least $6 trillion.
Oh, I agree. I think that's an excellent figure. You treble what the debt is and put it at their doorstep and say, pay it. Because you rate this pandemic, this pestilence upon the world, you're going to pay for it. And they have to have the wherewithal to do it. And I think President Trump is the person who will do that and who will make that assertion. Friendly though he is with President Xi, I know that he is, but he's always that way. He's trying to open the doors, but nonetheless, he's not going to be fooled and he's not going to be hoodwinked by somebody who should have known better. This was the work of the Chinese Communist Party. This was wreaked on the world. They need to pay.
All right, so let's do this. Here's a last call here. Let's do this from Kathleen, Wyoming. Kathleen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I truly believe that they did this intentionally just to prove they could possibly be the superpower with this whole one world order thing coming at us. And God's blessings to all you at ACLJ. I support you every month
that.
And every other chance I get.
Thank
yes,
you.
Sir.
We appreciate
and,
that.
And I really appreciate everything y'all do so much. And I have one quick question.
Yep.
I didn't get to hear the first part of the broadcast, so I didn't know if there's some kind of a second stimulus, anything, because I'm not working, so I was just kind of curious.
We've had a second stimulus. There's talk of a possible third stimulus, correct, man?
Yes, they're beginning negotiations on that now. The Senate is in town this week. The House will be back next week. I think probably a couple weeks away. Jay, we don't know what's going to be in that yet, so I would just tell the caller, the president wants to see a payroll tax cut in there and also an infrastructure component. Democrats are talking about money to states and localities and maybe even like some mail-in voting. We don't know about individual payments to Americans, Jay. That'll be one of the issues that's on the table. But I think you're probably 2, 3, 4 weeks away from something being on the floor of both chambers.
Now, let me tell you what we've got on the floor. We got on the floor of our office, anyways, preparations going on for the Supreme Court of the United States. Today, you heard for the first time in U.S. history, Supreme Court arguments argued remotely via phone. Everybody was in a different location. All the justices were in different locations. All of the advocates were in different locations. So it was very unique in that regard. And I think it was... it came off, I thought, pretty flawlessly. And Andy, we got only about a minute and a half here. All things considered, that they had to do this very quickly and move to this, it pretty much went off very quickly, and I think it gave an orderly process, and at least there is now advocacy that goes with the briefs as well.
I liked it. I thought it was beautifully done. I could hear them. I could hear the answers that the advocates were given without interruption by the justices, in some cases trying to upstage one another. I think it is the new normal. I think we're going to see it again. I think they probably will go back to the old way of doing it in chamber, in the Supreme Court building. But I'd like to see this done in the district courts, and I'd like to see it done in the circuit courts.
Well, I suspect when they go back to their own building, it will be back to old habits. But I don't mind those old habits. Those are a lot of fun, too. But we're going to, as I said, folks, I am right around the corner from where we are in the studio. I'm going to have a podium up, and I'm going to have something to look at. And that podium is going to be a duplicate of what we have at the Supreme Court of the United States. You got to get in your mindset. I understand one of the advocates today did it by podium, too. Some people are going to be sitting down. Some people wear casual clothes. I'm wearing a blue suit, a white shirt, and a red tie. That's how it's going to be. All right, thanks for listening to us today. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.